The content of this program is intended for a blind and visually impaired audience. You're listening to North Carolina Reading Service. This is Connect to Success. I am your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill. For the next half hour, we will be reading articles to empower and inspire in hopes that you will connect to your own success. Our first story is from the American Alliance of Museums, AAM. _us.org, their alliance blog. It comes from Samantha Silverberg. It is a new way to see, looking at museums through the eyes of the blind. Let's talk about accessibility. In the 21st century era of inclusivity, museums are working towards making the visitor experience a more positive and unique one as part of efforts to increase the number of visitors to museums. In these efforts, issues of accessibility are often overlooked. Not everyone realizes that accessibility is more than just installing ramps and making sure there's enough room to move freely in the space. If museums truly want to be more inclusive, they need to understand that not everyone who is classified as disabled uses a wheelchair, and they need to not end at physical entry to the building. For example, some people have trouble hearing, some people have sensory processing issues, others have visual impairments and therefore have trouble navigating even everyday life sometimes. It is the last group that I will focus on. People with visual impairments deserve to have a unique museum experience just as much as the average person, and the technologies being developed for them to navigate everyday life can also be used in the museum to help with that. And even though these technologies are made for the visually impaired, everyone can benefit from their use in museums. My mother became legally blind a few years ago after being diagnosed with a form of macular degeneration. She took it surprisingly well from my perspective, but it made me think. I always loved going places with her, including museums. My chosen profession is museum work, and being close with my mom, I want her to be involved. When I started graduate school, we had several lectures about accessibility in museums, and given my personal connection, I chose to write my thesis about the visually impaired in museums. This article is a modified version of this thesis. Who better to help me generate ideas than my own mother? And so I took her along with me to visit three exhibitions at three different museums and told her to give me her impression of each of them and her opinions on the overall experience. Exhibit 1, an art museum. The art museum we went to was going through an extensive renovation at the time of our visit, so the experience of navigating the museum space has likely improved overall since then. That being said, one thing renovations can't fix is the availability and quality of audio tour equipment. When we first entered the museum, we were given some seemingly understandably instructions on how to get to the exhibition we wanted to see. I say seemingly understandable because as a sighted person, I was able to figure out which direction to go and where to climb the stairs, etc. My mother made it there with my help. If she had been by herself, it might have been a bit difficult to locate the exhibition, even with the remaining vision she has, as the exhibition itself was in a small part of the gallery. The exhibition was a small one featuring art from ancient Egypt, fascinating and very beautiful works. It took up a small corridor with the objects mounted in cases on the walls. The introductory label was informative and presented in a large enough print so that my mother might have been able to read it. If not for the lighting, artificial lights hurt her eyes. If they are too dim, then reading is almost impossible, regardless of font size. I had to do most of the label reading and object description for her. Once we had gone through the space, I returned to the entrance and asked the person at the front desk what kind of audio tour they had available. They proceeded to show me a device that looked like it emerged from a time capsule sealed in 1995. It was an actual CD player, a chunky box the size of a handbag. This was the only one available, too. There were no other copies and no other devices for visitors' use. Needless to say, I was surprised. The employee behind the counter implied that this device would be replaced with the upcoming renovations. I unfortunately had not been back since, but I hope that it is true. And also informed me that there would be an upcoming dossier training session specifically targeted for visually impaired visitors. Dossier training is great and will definitely help to improve the visitor experience. However, many visitor studies indicate that there are different types of visitors with divergent needs and interests, and this is no different for those with visual impairments. Not everyone who visits a museum is interested in a guided tour. So what's the solution in that case? I thought a few options. Solution number one, better or more modern audio tour devices. For those visitors who prefer navigating a museum on their own but still want more information than what's on the labels, audio guides are the happy medium. Many museums have fantastic audio tours and digital guides available, but not everyone who visits knows about them. Perhaps better advertising of the tour is the key to making them more accessible. Another way is to update the technological medium that presents the tour. There are several companies today that specialize in creating digital content, and many museums are open to forming partnerships with them. What needs to be addressed while creating this content, of course, is accessibility. While digital content and audio tours are a great way for a visual impaired person to learn about the objects in a museum, it can still seem very detached if all they are doing is listening to someone talk about an object without a clear understanding of what the object is. Solution two, an Apali app. A startup based in Melbourne, Australia, called Apali, has developed an app that uses image recognition software to help people identify objects in the space around them. The app, called Apali Vision, uses the smartphone's camera to record objects within its view and tells the phone's owner what they are looking at. On their website, they explain how the Apali Vision app is made specifically for the visually impaired. Since they are open to collaborations, this seems like a great opportunity for museums to have an easily accessible tool for visually impaired visitors to use. The best part is that it doesn't need an internet connection to work. Exhibit number two, a natural history museum. The dinosaur fossil exhibition at the Natural History Museum we visited is also undergoing a renovation in preparation for its reopening. We visited the temporary exhibition there, and since the museum is pretty popular, it was unsurprisingly crowded. This didn't make it too difficult to navigate, though, as the museum is used to accommodate larger numbers. And this article was done a while ago, so hopefully both of these, as I read right now, both of these museums have updated, and so they do have now more things for visually impaired. She goes on to say, this wall paneling and some other labels were much easier for my mother to read, which was a big plus. Some labels were smaller than others, but this understandably giving the exhibition content dinosaur fossils. I was also looking out for interactive elements because natural history museums have the best potential for them after science centers and interactives that engage multiple senses, so it goes a long way toward accessibility and inclusivity. For that reason, I was pleased to see a display of a pair of Triceratops tusks that visitors were allowed to touch. This was the only interactive part of the exhibition, though, which was a little disappointing. I realized this exhibition is temporary, so interactives are not really an option, but I hope when the new permanent one is complete, there are more interactive displays available. Otherwise, it seems like a huge missed opportunity. Solution one, aptics. A great way to make interactive displays and features in a natural history museum or any history museum is with something called haptics, the science of applying touch, sensation, and control to interaction with computer applications. By using special input-output devices, users can receive feedback from computer applications in the form of felt sensation in the hand of other parts of the body. In combination with a visual display, haptics technology can be used to train people for tasks requiring hand-eye coordination, such as surgery and spaceship maneuvers. It can also be used for games in which you feel as well as see your interactions with images. Haptics is already in use in some universities and museums, and is also a great tool for conservators, allowing someone to touch an object without having to remove it from collection storage can not only enhance the experience for the visitor, but also give new life to an object otherwise unavailable for display. It essentially works by using touch sensors hooked up to a computer. When the computer recognizes that you are close enough to the object, it sends vibrations to the handheld component to produce the illusions of actual touch. For more information, you can find out more on their links. Solution 2, 3D printing. We likely have all heard of 3D printing. The printers themselves sell in small models at places like bookstores and electronic retail stores. You also may have heard that they have been used successfully in some art museums to create replicas of artwork for people to touch. The Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York has made successful use of this technology. By allowing artists and visitors to make their own copies of artworks on display at the museum and exhibitions, the artist's new work made with the printed copies. The Art Institution of Chicago also uses 3D printed copies from their collection to aid in the curriculum for their design students. This success in art museums is especially transferable to history and science museums. If a 3D replica can be made of a painting or sculpture, why not a fossil? An artifact. Pretty much anything can be made with a 3D printer. So why aren't more museums jumping on the 3D bandwagon? The short answer is budget and copyright issues. Exhibit 3, an aerospace museum. The aerospace museum we went to is massively popular with an impressive size and atmosphere. Given the size of the museum and the interactive nature of many of the exhibitions, you would think it would be easier for a visually impaired person to enjoy the overall experience. The interactives and displays were great, and my mother commented after our visit that this was definitely her favorite of the three exhibitions we went to. The problem, though, was navigating it. One of the interactives involved a motion sensor and a giant screen, and so it took up a considerable amount of floor space within the first part of the exhibition. The interactive itself was pretty fun, mimicking the flighting patterns of birds. But put a person in every available spot on the floor, and others would have to walk through the interactive to make it to the rest of the displays. My mother said as much as we made our way through the space, she immediately commented on how she would be confused if she saw people standing in the middle of the room, having not noticed the bird silhouettes outlined on the floor. Perhaps it is a different section of the museum which was dedicated to this exhibition and might have made up for the issue. The museum, of course, has several exhibition spaces of various sizes, but given this was another temporary exhibition. This is not always an option. So how can museums rectify this? Solution 1, wearable technology. If my mother had gone to this exhibition by herself, there would have been a greater chance of being injured or bumping into objects and other people. This is a problem visually impaired people face all the time in their daily lives, regardless of where they are. Guided dogs and white canes are the norm for helping with this issue, but not everyone can afford or accommodate a guide dog. And while canes are useful for helping to avoid obstacles, they fall short in allowing the user to discern what's around them. They are also not practical for use in certain places. My mother doesn't always use hers if we're at a place like the supermarket where there's already limited walking space. Enter wearable technology. Car company Toyota is developing prototypes for devices that visually impaired people can use to know more about what's around them, called Project Blade, B-L-A-I-D. The device is mounted on the shoulders and includes a camera that records images of the wearer's surroundings. It speaks to the wearers and tells them how far away something is and how long it would take for them to get to that spot. The technology is similar to what Toyota uses in some of their car models. This could be adapted for use in museums to accompany an audio tour. Solution 2, universal design. One major way some of these problems can be minimized or eliminated entirely is if we consider them from the beginning. During the initial exhibition design, we can use universal design principles to better incorporate inclusivity. Dr. Cheryl Burgstaller of the University of Washington sums it up best. When UD principles are applied, products and environments meet the needs of potential users with a wide variety of characteristics. Disability is just one of many characteristics that an individual might possess. For example, one person could be Hispanic, 6 feet tall, male, 30 years old, and an excellent reader, primarily a visual learner, and deaf. All of these characteristics, including his deafness, should be considered when developing a product or environment he, as well as individuals with many other characteristics, might use. Final thoughts? Obviously, the biggest roadblock to adopting these technologies is budget. Not every museum has money they can magically draw out of a hat to pay for these things. This is where grants come into play. Many foundations and other grant-giving institutions specialize in funding for technology, and they are great places to reach out for this. Additionally, loan policies don't have to apply exclusively to collections objects. If a museum has extra resources they can provide to another museum, a long-term loan agreement can be reached so the technology can reach as many people as possible. The groups that make the technologies can also partner with museums, which is not unheard of in a modern times. In our current world of increasing inclusivity, we can't afford to ignore accessibility. This means that we must also acknowledge developments in technology outside the museum field and use them to our advantage wherever necessary. Using new technology to help those who can't see not only enhances their museum experience, but can also allow sighted people to look at museum exhibitions in a new way. The author of this blog was Samantha Silverberg. She's an emerging museum professional living in Northern Virginia. She works on this issue of accessibility for the visually impaired for her thesis at Arizona State University, where she earned a Master of Arts degree in museum in 2016. Accessibility is an important issue for her as her mother is a person with a visual impairment and she looks to advocate for better learning environments for everyone. And with this story, we have another story called Mashable.com, and they talk about 5 interactive ways art is becoming more accessible to the blind community. Art is a universal medium of expression, bridging gaps across language, time, and culture. But galleries and museums aren't always accessible to everyone, often excluding blind people and those with low vision from truly experiencing the art world. With about 285 million blind or visually impaired people in the world, that's a sizable part of the global population being left out. But innovations, both simple and high-tech, are making the art world even more inclusive. Many blind people and those with low vision have experienced art through audio description of pieces, whether it's recording commentary from museums or explanations from friends in real time, but this can prevent them from interpreting pieces of art for themselves. Luckily, advocates have developed new solutions, creating tactile ways for art lovers to substitute touch for sight. Here are just a few ways art is becoming more accessible for blind and low vision communities around the world. 3D printing of fine art. 3D printing is making art more accessible by creating touchable versions of art, especially famous pieces. Blind people and those with low vision, some of whom have never viewed works like the Mona Lisa or the Scream, can now feel their way through these iconic works. One company at the forefront is 3D PhotoWorks, which makes tactile versions of historic paintings and modern photography through 3D printing. The pieces made by 3D PhotoWorks also feature sensors, which activate audio descriptions of the work at a person's feel around the piece. 3D PrintWorks has brought its inclusive art to museums around the country, but it wants to eventually provide accessible options for art lovers who can't see in all 35,000 museums across North America. Number two, incorporating Braille into visual art. Including Braille in traditional forms of art is one way to make pieces more accessible while also celebrating blind culture. And one particular artist has paved the way for this innovative technique. New York-based artist Roy Nacham creates what he calls visual art for the visually impaired. His work is undeniably gorgeous at first glance, even serves as cover art for Rihanna's album, Anti. But for those who can't see Nacham's eye-catching visuals, the art has different layers of artistic appeal, poetic writings embossed on the artwork's surface in Braille. To highlight the tactile importance of his work, Nacham also lightly covers his art in ashes, which leaves fingerprint marks on the work as a person reads the Braille messages. The prints left behind act as a type of documentation of human contact with his work. Nacham's innovative form of interactive art allows everyone to experience the same art in different yet equally powerful ways. Number three, extra texture paintings for inclusivity. Making art more accessible to people who can't see doesn't require changing already existing pieces. Paintings, for example, can be created with this audience in mind from the start, layering paint to make it more tactile experience. One well-known artist using this technique is John Bramblett, who began painting after he lost his eyesight due to complications with epilepsy and Lyme disease in 2001. Bramblett says losing his sight helped change the way he thought about art and color for the better. He often creates his pieces with thick layers of paint, appealing to touch as well as gaze of fans who can see. Though layering paint to create more texture work is common, artists who use the technique specifically to make their art more inclusive are relatively rare. Regardless of the lack of popularity, painting with texture is simple, low-tech, and a low-tech way to bring art to those who can't experience it through sight. Number four, tactile art that welcomes touch. We're used to hearing the phrase, please don't touch the art, but California-based contemporary artist Andrew Myers creates work specifically to challenge this common disapproving phrase. Using screws of different heights, the artist creates topographic light portraits by inserting the screws into wooden boards, making images with meticulous gaps and grooves. As a result, his work has mass appeal for blind people and those with low vision who can touch his portraits. Tactile art like Myers, which includes any art meant to be felt in order to be fully experienced, is engaging for art lovers of all visual ability. From complex pottery to plastic protruding from canvases, tactile forms of art grant a fuller experience to gallery goers who can't see. Myers documents his work with tactile art in the documentary Please Touch the Art, which features a blind man filling a portrait of himself for the first time. Number five, tactile tours of museums and galleries. Some major museums and smaller galleries are throwing the look but don't touch mantra out the window, and it's all in the name of inclusivity. To do this, museums have begun using touch and even smell to give those without vision the ability to experience art. Several museums and galleries have started hosting tactile tours, which serve as ways for blind people and people with low vision to touch replicas of famous artworks. The Louvre in Paris and the Guggenheim and the Met in New York have all established tactile tours where people can touch pieces of art or cast of famous museums, famous works. The goal of these tours, one gallery curator at the Guggenheim told The Atlantic, is to allow people who are blind or have low vision to see with their brains, not their eyes. You can find a list of popular museums in the U.S. offering accessible programs for blind people and those with low vision. And we're going to end with a story on vision through words. It's from is.wordpress.com. New Year wishes. Another year is upon us. We all have hopes and dreams for the upcoming year. Love, peace, good health, prosperity, maybe a small miracle or two. One thing I've learned in life is that no matter what we hope or plan for, be prepared to improvise and go with the changes. Vision Through Words has been posting poetry and essays written by visually impaired and blind writers since 2012. We have been lucky to have writers from all walks of life share their feelings and experiences in the blind community of the world. As it turns out, we are all more alike than different. We've read pieces that have made us laugh and made us cry, and always something we could relate with. As with all things, nothing is forever. Things end and new things happen. With that in mind, Vision Through Words will be sharing some poetry with you. One poem is called Unfrequented by Valerie Morani. I stand alone, shivering in chilly, condescending winds of unacceptance. You are too busy to give me a chance. Look at me as a person instead of a symbol of blindness. You won't meet me halfway. I feel it like a hard slap against my cheek. Rejection stings for a time, reminding me to appreciate myself. Again, I gather my strength, assess my ability, believing someone wiser will accept who I am. But know everything lost will be recovered when you drift into the arms of the undiscovered. Valerie Moreno is 59 and a published writer. She writes poetry, memoirs, fiction, and articles. Her eye disease is ROP. Some of her favorite hobbies include reading, raising, line drawing, music, and singing. And we'll have more poetry next month. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time for this episode of Connect to Success. You're listening to North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Connect to Success. We hope you've enjoyed this last half hour. Be sure to tune in next month for more information, empowerment, and inspiration, and hopefully it will continue to help you to connect to your success. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I am your hometown girl, Shadate Hargett Hill, and you're listening to NCRS 101.9. See you next time on the radio.